Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Friday, August 31st, 2012. I'm your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined by two Alligator Sports writers who are glad to be back. We have Josh Jernovoy.
Glad to be here.
And Joe Morgan.
Hello.
All right, so first of all, I guess welcome back to the Alligator Sports Podcast. We've been away for a while. Had a couple of technical issues to work out. Some people weren't around for the summer, but back and ready to go in full swing. I can't be the only one excited for football season, right, guys?
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm not sure if we're going to be watching a great product. I'm excited to be covering the games this year, but we'll get to that.
All right. Well, anyway, previewing kind of what the podcast is going to be like this semester, we're hoping to do two shows a week, kind of a preview on Friday, like the one you're going to hear today, and then a recap show on Mondays. We also have a new segment, apparently. Joe wants to do his five-second movie reviews. I don't know why, but we'll turn that over to him now.
You get to say the name of the
movie. No, just set it up yourself and go.
The Italian Job, Charlize Theron, Mini Coopers, B-.
All right, wow. That was pretty concise. I was worried you were going to go way over 5 seconds, but...
5 seconds means 5 seconds.
All right, so with that, I think we're ready to start talking about football. I don't think anybody will complain about that. Before we really get into it, make sure if you have any feedback for us or anything you want us to talk about, send emails to podcast@alligator.org. We always like to hear from the listeners out there. So with that, let's get to it, and we'll start by talking about a little bit about last season. Finished 7-6. Obviously, their goal is to be a tougher and more physical team this year, coming in with a new mentality, new strength program, more physical training camp. Do you guys think we're going to see a tougher team this year, if anything? We'll talk about win projections at the end, but just overall, the physicality and the toughness, avoiding the soft label that Muschamp gave them last season?
Well, I think you're going to see some toughness on their part. I mean, like, obviously, they're not just going to go through one off season after a comment like that and not do anything about it. Will that translate to talent on the field? I don't think so, but I definitely think you're going to see some added toughness, especially some of the incoming recruits. Dante Fowler just sounds like a tough person by his name, so I mean, I'm just going
to
go on.
And he's supposed to be pretty good at football.
Yeah.
But the name helps, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Joe said, I'm not sure exactly how much of an increase in talent level there is. They brought in a couple really impressive guys on defense, and you're not going to just be complacent after hearing your coach say that about you. But I think the defense is already pretty good at the end of last year. I don't know how much being tough is going to make them play that much better than they were. They were pretty darn good at the end of last year. I think their downfall was the offense, and I kind of expect it to be the same thing this year. The defense definitely came together a little bit more towards the end of the season, so I expect it to be more consistent throughout the course of the season than it was last year. Whether or not that can just be attributed to toughness or just those guys getting more experience, I don't know, but I doubt that they're going to have to get called out for their lack of toughness again.
Right, and I think the thing that everybody's pointing to is the new strength coach, Jeff Dillman, and the work that he's done in the offseason with these guys. A lot of Olympic-style lifts, but until we actually see a difference on the field, I know some guys have a bit of weights listed higher on the roster, but I'm not gonna totally buy into anything like that until we see it. We'll start where everybody else is starting now when we go with our position-by-position previews. We'll start, obviously, with the quarterbacks, Drissett and Briscoe. Driscoll and Brissett are going to be splitting snaps to start the season. One's going to play the first quarter. We don't know who yet, and one's going to play the second quarter. And then at that point, Muschamp and Brent Peace are going to evaluate at halftime and take it from there. It doesn't mean one guy's going to play the whole second half, but it means they'll have a decision one way or the other on how snaps are split. So, guys, what do you make of this competition and the two QB system itself? Do you guys think that's going to have is that a good idea?
I think it's okay for this week because I think they can get away with it and still beat Bowling Green, even if it's not as effective as they would like us to think it's going to be. But I think to do that against, once you get to the SEC, and to do that against SEC defenses, pull one quarterback, then put another one back in, I really do think you, in a game where you're playing a team that has a close to an equal talent level as you, you have to allow the quarterbacks to get a rhythm. I think that the Gators can beat Bowling Green on talent alone, so I don't think it'll be an issue this week. They obviously want to further evaluate these guys in live game action, which I really have no problem with, but I really would not let it go beyond this week if I was Will Muschamp and Brent Peace.
Tyler Murphy could beat Bowling Green.
Yeah.
You know? So could Skylar Mornweg. So could Ryan McGriff, a walk-on. I keep seeing on the depth chart. Like, honestly, it's stupid. It's stupid. And they should just go ahead and pick a starter. I don't see what the problem is. I think Muschamp needs to man up and actually do something.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Ooh, pretty bold words.
I mean, like, you're the head coach of a Division I program. Quit being so indecisive. I mean, if they're as equal as you say, just pick one, you know?
But that's not fair to the other guy, Joe.
Well, there's got to be one thing. There's got to be one thing that he likes better.
But they've both been so awesome in practice, so you have to give one a chance to stand out.
We're talking about practice.
Okay. Before you get off on that tangent, I think one point I kind of want to bring up is, and I agree that the system, maybe it can work for this week, give them both a chance in game, and then they should pick a guy. But my kind of contention is that I'm not sure it even matters. Just because if they truly are as even as they say they are, mm-hmm. and they do a lot of similar things, all the players say they can't really tell who's in there and it doesn't change their roles any. Do you guys think it really matters who wins the role? I mean, because they're basically the same guy, apparently.
I think it does matter. You know, because they aren't the same guy. I mean, Brissett's more of a, you know, pocket passer. I mean, he can move. He's not rigid like Brantley or somebody. But, I mean, you know, Jacoby Brissett isn't slow or awkward. I mean, he may not be as fast or as agile, but, I mean...
Well, yeah, I think they do have differences. The way I've kind of understood is maybe they're both playing equally well. They might not be doing the same things to get the same results in practice. They've been telling us that Driscoll needs to be a little more careful when he's running the ball. So it sounds like maybe even in practice he's probably running a lot more than Brissett is. Maybe they're kind of gaining yards that way. So they're going to get results in different ways. But they've been equally effective according to what the team has been telling us. So I think that it might matter eventually just based on the kind of defenses they're going to be playing, but I don't really have a problem with them doing it after this game.
Right. I think they've admitted as much that Driscoll's the better runner, yeah. and Brissett, typically, I think the understanding is he throws more deep passes while Driscoll does more of the check down stuff.
And the thing is, I think one of the things they want to see out of Driscoll, and they've kind of said it, is they want to see them be able to kind of do what Brissett's doing, kind of take some risk, throw it downfield. I think anyone who kind of watched him as a recruit, I remember in that one of the Under Armour All-American games he did, he pretty much with the flick of his wrist threw it 70 yards downfield. So we know he has the arm strength. It's just, for whatever reason, in this setting, in these college games, he's been a little bit more conservative. And that was understandable being thrown into the fray like he was last year. But at this point, when you have a whole offseason under your belt getting first-team reps, kind of need to show more confidence and maybe part of that's the receivers, but he's got to be willing to do that every once in a while.
And now, it's so hard to say when we haven't seen them, but would you guys rate the quarterback situation this year better or worse than last year with Brantley, when Brantley's healthy? Forget all the injury stuff.
Well, I don't think so, because when Brantley was going against Alabama last year, Florida looked, you know, above average.
And then, again,
No,
I was just going to say in that Georgia game, too, he was essentially playing on one good leg, and they still move the ball a lot. We still don't know for a fact if either of these quarterbacks can do that. And I think he should, because when Brissett and Driscoll got in last year, they weren't too very effective moving the ball. And like I've said, there are a lot of other factors that went into that. The offensive line was shaky, the receivers weren't great, but Brantley did move the ball up and down the field, even when he wasn't healthy, like in that game against Georgia that they almost won.
Right. I mean, I tend to make the point that, you know, Brantley, for as much as he took a lot of heat when he was here, he still put up, you know, a decent yardage total last season. When you see what those other freshmen did, obviously they were freshmen being thrown into tough situations they didn't expect to be in. But just you saw the drop-off. It was a big deal when they got Brantley back, so much that they would play him out there hurt. Maybe these guys can progress quite a ways in one off-season, but, I mean, again, that's another kind of I'll believe it when I see it sort of thing there. So, again... Josh mentioned this a little bit. They're kind of only going to be as good as the offensive line blocks for them. The way it projects right now from left to right is Xavier Nixon, James Wilson, Jonathan Harrison, John Jalapio, and Chaz Green. Although Chaz Green said there was kind of going to be a three-tackle rotation, which I'm assuming involves Patchen, who's out for the first game with a strained pectoral muscle. DJ Humphreys hasn't really factored in because he's had a MCL injury the last couple of weeks. And then... Jessamyn Dunker is kind of a big freshman who's expected to contribute a little bit at the guard spot. But, again, we talked about Dillman's strength program a little bit. Do you guys buy into this at all, that it's going to make a difference for them? They've all had pretty positive things to say about it, and they certainly need to improve after what they showed last year, being largely the same unit this time out.
I'm not going to say the line's going to be as good as when they had the penalties here, but I really do think there's been a lot of improvement, especially because a lot of people have made a point to mention the leadership of John Jalapio during the offseason. Like, it's not one of those angles we've had to kind of, like, coax out of them, you know? And, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think they would talk about it that much if it wasn't something significant. And then with the strength program of Jeff Dillman, the Olympic lifts, bigger and stronger. I mean, I'm not saying Gillespie's going to run for 50 million yards like he told us, but, I mean, I think they're going to be decent to all right.
So. Yeah, I don't think they can be a lot worse than they were last year, but it's another one of those things where it's kind of like I'll believe it when I see it. And I don't really know about rotating offensive linemen. I'd assume that's just going to be on a drive-by-drive basis, which I guess is okay. It could probably lead to a lot of problems if you're just kind of doing that play-by-play. I don't exactly know what the logic behind that is, aside from just avoiding fatigue. But we always hear about that. You want to have the same five guys and become a very cohesive unit. And it seems like that might be hampering the achieving that goal if you're just going to be rotating a different tackle in all the time.
I think that's a huge point that I was going to try to make is they talked last year a lot about how good the chemistry was, and that never translated into anything. And they can say again this offseason that it's getting better, and they're all so close on and off the field, but when you're rotating people and they didn't know who the starters were until this week, it's hard to believe that they have a unit of five guys that's able to work together as well as they try to sell us that they are. Another thing is I want to talk about individually if there's any player you guys are especially excited about or one you think will make the biggest jump. Because we talk about Joe apparently thinks they're going to be improved. I tend to think all of these guys are going from their third year to fourth year or even up to like James Wilson. He's been here 5 years already and starting his sixth. I have a hard time seeing any of them make a significant jump. The only guy I would see with like a potential upside is Chaz Green, who's going from redshirt freshman season to sophomore year. So, I mean, he's the guy I would watch as a guy who could actually break out and be a good player. But the rest of these guys, I don't have much hope for. I don't know where you guys stand on that.
I agree with you on Green's upside, but the fact that they haven't just straight up said he's the right tackle. And not like we said, they're going to be rotating. The fact that he hasn't just totally owned that position in practice to the point where they're like, he's our guy, makes me want to temper my expectations for him. I'm excited to see Wilson. It's not like he's ever gotten in a lot and just been totally a sieve and a revolving door and let guys get by him. He's just been hurt. He's the class of 2007. I mean, he's been redshirted twice. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. So I think it would be unreasonable to expect him to come in and just be a solid block right there and just not be able to let anyone get by him. But I want to see what he does because we've really never gotten to see him play for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I mean, when I say they're going to be better, I don't necessarily mean they're, you know, top-round NFL draft picks next year. But the thing is I feel like you can improve just on technical things, you know, aspects, cohesiveness, picking up certain things that maybe in a new offense. Oh, great, they're in the new offense again. Well, there you go.
Right. It's just, to me, there's so much that's similar to last year for these guys, and they haven't made that jump yet, so it's a lot to think that they're going to make that jump now. But
it'll be stronger, but
yeah, maybe
not necessarily.
Again,
better.
That's another thing. It's like they can be stronger, but so many times they were just beat with speed or just on technical ability or quickness.
Or
and
picking up assignments.
Right, things that just have nothing to do with how strong they are, and if you put on weight and get even slower, that's not helping you either, so
think of power cleans and dumbbells, though, so you need that.
Right. But, I mean, maybe the strength is a big deal because apparently Florida wants to switch to the downhill running game, and the guys that they're paving the way for, the guys the offensive line are trying to make a path for, is Mike Gillisley. He seems to be the number one running back. Then behind him, Mac Brown is number two on the depth chart, and then behind him is some combination of Matt Jones, Omarius Hines, and Chris Johnson. So let's start with Gillisley. Averaged 5.9 yards per carry last season, but he only got the ball 56 times, and a stat I looked up for one of my columns was that only two of them came in the second half when the game was within one score. So basically the point of that is he just hasn't been counted on in big-time situations before. His numbers are coming against the teams that they destroy or late in games where they fall way behind and the other team's pretty much out of it, just not as interested anymore. He's hoping for 1,500 yards and 24 touchdowns this season. I don't think anybody's going to predict that he'll reach those goals, but what do you guys think he could do this season?
Well, I'm announcing my Gilly Tracker every week. I'm going to give an update.
Another new podcast bit.
Yes, I'm going to give an update on my Gilly Tracker, which will basically be how many yards Gillisley has and touchdowns, how many he needs moving forward. And
the pace number, I'm saying.
Yeah, the pace number. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. But, I mean, if it works out for Florida, great. If Mike Gillisley is, like, some sort of hidden gem, then that would be quite a coup for them, but I don't think so.
I don't think anyone disagrees that he has the athletic ability to kind of achieve those things, but it's simply a matter of, like Greg said, not having seen him done it. He made the point very well in his column that just, like, I think, was it the Kentucky game last year where he had, like, a 60-yard touchdown run in garbage time? Like,
yeah, it might have been even longer than that. It really inflated all the numbers.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm not sure what it looks like if you take that out of it, but, like, you don't want to do that. I mean, a run like that shows that the guy has some athletic ability, but we just haven't necessarily seen him do it against first-team, high-quality SEC defense as we saw him do it against Kentucky. Kentucky and then teams that were worse than Kentucky. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to see what he can do because I think physically he's all there, but we got to see what he can do when he is the guy, doesn't have Rainey and Dems ahead of him. But we just talked about the offensive line. A lot of the points we're making will just be rendered moot if they can't open up holes for him. So we'll see how that plays out.
Very, very true. And I think you talk about the offensive line's impact. I think last year they were less important given that the Dempsey and Rainey were kind of just going to run outside and we're going to try to do their own thing. But this year their play is even more critical.
Because Gillis is ideally going to go up the middle.
Right, right. And then when we talk about Gillislee, Muschamp, something he's been saying that's really interesting is he wishes that they had gotten more carries for Gillislee last season. Cleaning lady makes a cameo on the podcast there. Anyway, Muschamp said he wishes Gillislee had gotten more carries last season. But at the same time, there's got to be a reason he didn't, whether it's because he's always banged up, which was something that was floating around last season, or if it's because he can't pass protect, which is another rumor that's kind of been slowing him down and something that they've talked about briefly in the past, or maybe it's because he can't catch, he didn't have any receptions last year. Which one of these things, or all of them, are you guys looking at that you think maybe Gillislee could hold him back?
See, that's the thing with Gillislee. Like, he just hasn't done much, and you kind of go from the offensive lineman thing where they're not, like, are you really going to see a jump from year three to year four? And I know running back's a whole different animal, but honestly, if he wasn't getting carries for last year's team, I mean, unless there was an injury, I don't really see him becoming, like, a premier back in the SEC at all for this offense.
I'm sure they'd like him to catch the ball because they need as many pass-catching options as they can, but I mean, I can understand why he wasn't getting in ahead of Rainey and Dems last year. Those guys were big playmakers, and they were seniors. I can see why they would want to give them every opportunity to get the bulk of the carries, but both of them, I believe, missed a little bit of time with injury last year, and we still didn't see Gillislee a lot. So I think that is what frustrated fans a lot of times last year, was because they would see him get that big run against Kentucky or just get in those other spots where they weren't really that important, but he averaged 5.9 yards a carry, so they saw him make long runs, and they wanted to see more of him, yet they weren't seeing him even when those other running backs were banged up, and I think that's kind of what frustrated people a lot.
I have a theory I'll float out there, and you guys can weigh in. I think last year we saw him a lot in kind of the Trey Burton Wildcat package, other kind of things they tried to do with Wildcat stuff. Makes me feel like they want to get him the ball, but there's some reason that he's either not picking up the regular offense or something he can't do is hindering him from being a bigger part of the regular offense. Are you guys with me on that at all?
I wouldn't say it's a matter of being able to pick up a playbook, because if they just got a new offense, and if he wasn't picking up this offense, then I don't think he'd be first on the depth chart. So I'm not really exactly sure what it is, though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just confused. I mean, there's got to be an injury.
Well, there was an injury at one point last year. I think we found that out after the Auburn game. Yeah.
I guess it was really nagging, because, I mean, even with Dempsey running the depth chart, you know, you would put Gillislee in the mix.
Change of pace.
Exactly.
So Josh makes it sound like there's a reason he's number one on the depth chart, or maybe it's just because all the other guys aren't that good. we'll run through them real quick, and then you guys can weigh in on which names stick out to you. A lot was thought about Mack Brown. He came as a four-star recruit, has not touched the ball a whole lot since he's been here. Matt Jones was a talented freshman, but physical runner, but he had kind of a propensity for getting banged up in high school. A lot of questions about how well his game's going to translate. Omarius Hines has done good things with his touches, but like Gillislee, they haven't really found ways to get him the ball. And Chris Johnson was on defense last year, so make of that what you will. But, I mean, does any of those guys excite you or stick out in any way?
Mack Brown still the second most famous college football Mack Brown.
Is he? There might be another Mack Brown in history that's more famous than Florida's Mack Brown.
Yeah,
we're the only ones who know who Mack Brown of Florida is.
Hmm. Well, wherever he's from, his high school knows who he is.
Yeah, probably. But anyway, Vane, do you expect anything of this guy, or?
I think he could be a nice backup piece, honestly. I mean, I feel like he can probably get a few carries a week, kind of spell Gillislee. I don't expect him to go on some sort of rampage. I'm not looking for a Darren McFadden, Felix Jones type thing.
And they spoke highly of him just earlier in this week for a guy that really didn't play much. Well, I guess none of the guys have really played that much before, but he's obviously the one that stood out enough to be the number two guy in the depth chart. So I guess that means something, but I think for whatever reason, he hasn't been able to get on the field. He's gotten on the field even less than Gillislee the last couple of years, so maybe it's something like Greg had talked about. Maybe he had trouble picking up the offense for some reason, or there had to have been some reasoning. I know he had injuries, too, for a guy that didn't play much that's probably a big red flag that he did get banged up, but it seems like there's some reason he hasn't gotten on the field much, and obviously very talented guy, so maybe he will surprise us.
Right, right. I mean, the one I'm interested in to see is Omarius Hines.
Yeah.
I felt like he, like I said, I think he's done good things with his touches, and he's another guy. He was a part of a different Wildcat package. There was the Burton and Gillislee Wildcat, and then there was the Rainey and Hines Wildcat, where he was kind of the wingback sweep guy there. And got the ball a couple times and did some good things with it, and it just looks like he's the kind of guy that can be a playmaker on an offense that obviously needs weapons with Demps and Rainey gone. So we'll see how they choose to use him. But Joe, you got something?
Yeah, one note on this whole Wildcat thing. Unless Trey Burton throws the ball in the Wildcat, I think it's useless because everybody knows it's going to be running.
Right, right. Well, you know what? I was going to go this in a different order, but you mentioned Trey Burton. Let's talk about this guy. Here, listen. You guys, all right, Josh has the facepalm. Joe's just laughing. He gets a lot of hate, but let's talk about last season. He had 37 carries, 125 yards. That is a 3.4 average, which is bad. Also had a negative 16-yard QB sneak. Three touchdowns. He also was 4-for-6 passing for 16 yards. That's pretty much nothing.
Best on the team.
And he had 19 catches for 149 yards. But at the same time, do you guys think there's any chance that the hate on Trey Burton has just spiraled completely out of control and he's now like an underrated player?
I don't think that many people hate on him besides...
No, I think there's a lot of people that hate him.
There are a lot of people I talk to, a lot of fans, friends of mine that are fans that think, oh no, we need to put him at quarterback, and I don't really... I just kind of...
Your friends are stupid.
I'm exasperated at that point. I guess so.
Not Greg Luka hates Trey Burton.
Okay, well...
He's a pretty big fan.
Hashtag bonkers.
Right. Well, I don't know, but like I don't know anyone that really has the same hate for him. I guess your friends are probably more football savvy than mine. Then hope they don't listen to this, but certain people they do say that they don't really have any hate for him. I think they all remember the Kentucky game in 2010 and just assume that this guy's a really great guy to have around.
So, I mean, do you guys think he's somewhere between where we put him and somewhere where they put him? Can we at least admit that much?
I just think it depends on where you're lining him up. He should not be a quarterback. The Wildcat package has just not been effective. And like Joe said, if he can't throw, that defeats the purpose of the Wildcat package. We've seen running backs throw better out of that package than Trey Burton. And Trey Burton played quarterback in high school. I think that he needs to, at the bare minimum, just be an H-back, be a tight end. I think he's been effective at times catching the ball. I don't think they need him to run it like they did in that Kentucky game a couple years ago, but... He seems like he is smart. That's why the coaches like him. He at least knows where to line up in like every single position and every single formation. And I think his smarts allow him to find holes in zone defenses and at least kind of get open sometimes. I feel like I at least remember him getting a lot of catches and running some decent routes. Like, I just don't think he should be used as anything except another option at tight end.
Right. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, Trey Burton's a fine player. You know, he'd be on the media guy cover at Kentucky or Vanderbilt or something. But, I mean... Yeah, like the hate's probably out of control. I mean, he's a nice player. He can do some things for you. And, I mean, that's basically it. At running back and tight end and stuff, he's just an okay piece.
Right. You guys mentioned running back and tight end. I think we'll see him a lot at fullback this season, too. And we'll talk about how all that factors in, given the new offensive system with coordinator Brent Pease and how he plans to shift and move all these guys. But while we're on the fullback position a little bit, let's talk about Hunter Joyer. He's a guy that looked pretty good last season. A big guy, blocking back. You know, I don't think there's any questions about how good he is and what he can do in the blocking game, but last season he had 18 carries for 82 yards. Do you guys see him getting a bigger chunk of the carries in that sense?
I would hope so. Whenever I saw him last year, I thought he would. He was a good contributor, and, I mean, he's always a pleasant guy to talk to, so the more he does in the field, it'll be better to talk to him at media availability. But, I mean, yeah, absolutely, especially with the hatred of Trey Burton, and maybe, you know, this fullback thing won't work out, and I think he's a solid piece, and he needs some game experience if he's going to keep developing.
Yeah, I don't think he's one of the few guys you don't really have much to say negative about. He simply, everyone agrees he's a good blocker. He went out there and did his job and would like to see what he can do with an increased role.
All right, so then let's move over to the wide receivers, who obviously struggled a lot last season. Deontay Thompson led the wide receivers with 21 catches. He's on the Ravens now somehow. And Andre DeBose led with 432 yards. But still, the top two on the depth chart right now are Frankie Hammond and Quentin Dunbar. So we'll start with Dunbar. Obviously, he's a talented guy. He's got speed. He's got a lot of potential. We've heard a lot about him. He was the star of spring practice in 2011, but he's never really produced on the field. Does anybody think this is the year that we finally see anything from Quentin Dunbar?
He was the star of the Furman game last year.
Yeah, those Paladins couldn't stop him, man.
Yeah, they couldn't stop much. I don't think they could stop us out there.
Quentin Dunbar doesn't scare me.
Not worried about him doing anything this season?
Not really. I mean, he'll probably have bigger numbers just because the catches will be more concentrated towards him.
Well, that was my next question. We can roll it into one. Over under 14 catches and 216 yards, which he had last season.
I'll give him more than that because I think he'll get some of Deontay's targets.
Well, the thing is, you would think he can get some of Deontay's targets, but a guy we're going to talk about later is LaTroy Pittman, so maybe they have as many options as they had last year.
I'll take the over on the catches, but the yards I'm going to abstain.
You're just not going to vote?
Not going to vote.
Push, exactly 216. All right. Josh?
No, I think he goes over in both of them. I got to think this guy had to have been a little bit humbled by last year. He probably paid attention a little bit to all the good press he got in 2011, and then he doesn't think he played great last year. I'm assuming he thinks he can do better, and I think he'll at least have some motivation, and that should translate to at least having 217 yards, I would say.
Right. I mean, I have to take the over, too, but
it's not very much at all.
Right. I have to take the over, too, but it's tentative, just because I don't know who from this group is going to be on the field and how long they're going to stay there. But one guy I think we can count on seeing a lot of is Frankie Hammond, who is, like we said, one of the number ones on the depth chart, along with Dunbar. Muschamp's called him the most consistent guy. Muschamp's loved him since he got here. But the thing about Hammond, it seems to be the blocking, the route running, the hands. He's only 6 feet tall, not really a burner, but... I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on what he could do this year? We'll play another over-under. He had 15 catches and 181 yards last year, which is lower than I thought.
I think he's going to do better. I think they need to have someone step up in the intermediate passing game. I think we've seen that Andre DeBose is going to be a boomer bust guy. I thought a guy like him would maybe be able to get open on more short routes and be able to do cuts and whatnot, but he hasn't been able to do that. And I think that's one of the things they've been able to praise Hammond for is his route running on plays like that. And I think that they're well aware of the fact that last year their passing game, it was either a really long touchdown to Andre DeBose or just a bunch of really short hitch routes. I think they're going to try and get more crossing routes and stuff like that. Hammond's specialty, I think they're going to try and get more of that in the game, and I think he'll definitely beat those statistical totals from 2011.
Yeah, I think Hammond will go over on both. But the thing about these wide receivers is Florida's done so many checkdowns, so many dumps the last 2 years from watching them. Like, I honestly, until I see Dunbar and Hammond catch significant passes in significant situations, I just can't have faith in them at all.
Right. It seems like he would be a good piece if he was the third or fourth guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But for him to be one of the top two is certainly kind of a damning indictment of the wide receivers there. But we'll talk about some of the guys that have a chance to overtake him. LaTroy Pittman, another spring superstar that he was this year while Dunbar was last year. But apparently has cooled down a little bit as they've asked him to learn more and take on a bigger role in the offense. The reviews have not been as high coming out of fall camp. Andre DeBose is obviously a deep threat, but he's struggled with consistency in his route running. For all the yards he put up, he only caught 16 passes last season. And there have been talks about unnamed receivers.
Michael McNeely.
Who typically have kind of TO problems that they're talking about in some of the recent availabilities. We're not going to say they're talking about DeBose because they're not going to say they're talking about DeBose, but it seems like he's the kind of guy that has the talent level and just hasn't put it all together, and that might be why he's not listed as one of the starters. And then Solomon Patton's always been a non-factor, but he was the other guy on the two or three deep that they listed there. So of that group, is there a guy you're excited about and anybody who stands out and you think is going to have a good year or could overtake one of those guys for the top two spots?
I'll say Pittman because he didn't play for Florida last year, so he has the best chance to do something.
Right, because you take the something like the W you know over the W you don't or something like
that old
phrase.
Well, they had the or on the depth chart. It was Andre DeBose or... with Troy Pittman backing up Dunbar at the X position, if I remember correctly, on the depth chart.
Sounds about right.
And I think that's very discouraging for DeBose to make the big plays he did last year. You'd want him to take a step forward, and he can't beat out a freshman on the depth chart. He might be the third string X receiver going into Saturday, which is just very discouraging. But the fact that Pittman's already pulled even with him, according to the depth chart, would make you think to maybe be able to expect something good out of him.
Who's this or guy on the depth chart? He's starting in like four or five spots. He's like Trey Burton.
I was going to say he's more versatile than Trey Burton.
I'm talking to this guy.
Yeah, we got to get him in the next availability. Getting back to DeBose real quick, I don't want to say too many bad things about him because we just don't know and we haven't gotten the opportunity to talk to him, but it just seems like there's got to be some issue that something he's doing or something the coaches are doing with him that with all that talent he hasn't been able to put it together. And if the reviews are what they are, it's hard to believe this year is going to be the year. But, again, that all just remains to be seen. And whenever we've talked to Muschamp and the coaches about wide receivers, and how bad they are. They always try to lump the tight ends into the group as kind of a reason to think that this is going to get better. So that's where we're going to go next. Jordan Reed, 28 catches for 307 yards last season. Guy that's 6'3", 243 pounds, great athlete, but he's just never really put it together as well.
He likes to show off his jumping ability, though, when he catches the ball.
Yes, I was just going to say. He seems like he does this thing where every time you throw it to him, he's going to jump, and I don't know what that's all about. But, I mean, do you guys think this is the year that he could finally put it together and play as well as his athleticism suggests it will?
I think so. You know, I look at these tight ends, and I don't have a lot of depth, especially after losing Colin Thompson to foot surgery, but I'm really confident in this group of tight ends. I don't know. I like Kent Taylor. I liked what he did in the open practice, even though it was a very limited thing. I like Jordan Reed, Clay Burton, whatever.
Right. I think he's probably the blocking guy, which is something I was worried about. Yeah.
Is that going to be him or Kevin Westbrook?
Burton was number two on the depth chart, so I would assume him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like surprisingly, even without depth and relative inexperience of not having many natural tight ends in the group, they're one of the groups I'm more confident in offensively.
Yeah, I think even though Reed likes to jump when he catches the ball, even if it's already at his chest, I think that he still showed he could get open, which is encouraging, and I expect him to be able to be more of a security blanket for these young quarterbacks. Young quarterbacks, inexperienced quarterbacks, they like to be able to go to their tight ends, I think, and it's easier to throw to them than the wide receivers. I think Kent Taylor might actually end up getting used as more of a wideout. He needs to add weight before he starts lining up on the line of scrimmage all the time. I think he's only like 6'5", 220, so he might be another option to line up at wide receiver at some points to go along with the guys we just talked about.
Right. On behalf of Cody Jones, who couldn't be with us today, I have to say Jordan Reed's probably going to have a monster season. Cody's a big Jordan Reed fan. He wanted to make sure I got that shout-out in there. But, another guy that's really interesting to me is Kent Taylor, and I would think we would have heard more about him. It's another thing where it's so hard to judge on what they bring up and what we bring up and how they respond to it when we can't really see anything, but I just feel like he's the kind of guy, and we're going to move now to talk about Brent Pease's offense and how these different guys fit in. Kent Taylor's a guy who's kind of versatile. Trey Burton's a guy who's kind of versatile. Amarius Hines is a guy who's kind of versatile. And the thing with Pease's offense is they're going to line up in different places and shift all over the field. Do you guys think that that's going to be as confusing for defenses and have as big of an impact as everybody wants to believe it will?
I think it might give the Gators a little more trouble at first. They're telling us they've, because they had all the pre-snap penalties last year, and they've told us, well, that was a problem in the spring, but now we've worked it out. It's one thing to work it out in practice. It's another thing to work it out once you get in front of your home crowd for the first time, and then once you go to Kyle Field. I think that actually might be a little bit more of an adjustment than they're expecting it to be. I think the offense is going to be hard for the offense not to have more life than it did last year, just because I don't think Charlie Weiss is very creative at all in his play calling. But I think the pre-snap motions might give them a little more trouble than they're anticipating.
Yeah, they're calling it mental gymnastics, and I've said this before, but Trey Burton is the Gabby Douglas of mental gymnastics.
I don't get it. I don't know if anybody gets it.
Gabby Douglas, the gold medalist from the London Games?
Okay, well, at least it was this year. If you said, like, Sean Johnson, I would have
I wasn't throwing out a Nasty Lucan reference or anything.
Nasty Lucan, dude.
I think in the first half of the year, this is going to be a disaster, honestly.
Wow.
Like, two different quarterbacks shifting everywhere. Are you kidding me? Like, they're going to have to keep it basic. There's no way that the Florida team last year, with just one offseason of improvement, is going to be able to look like the Patriots or something, just, like, running people around like crazy. So, I mean, I don't know. I just don't see it. And, like, the whenever the questions are asked, like, the shifts and motions, is it confused? It just sounds so hokey, you know? Like, because, I mean, I don't think they're going to be able to do it until about a third of the way into the year.
Right. I have to feel like if there was this magic formula that, like, every time you shift, nobody knows what's going on, this wouldn't be the only team doing it, you know?
Welcome to modern football.
Right. Like, this, we're, like, eventually every single team is going to shift every play, and we're just the first ones. But I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that that's going to have a huge impact, but I do want to talk a little bit more about something we kind of brushed over, is how different players kind of fit into that. Because I think if there is a beacon of hope, it is, like I kind of mentioned before, that the Hines and the Burtons of the world can line up in different spots, shift to different spots, and be equally effective there. Is there any... Are you guys with me?
Yeah. Well, because Hines, this is his first experience at running back. It'll be interesting to see how he kind of goes there, but we know he has experience at tight end. Even if he didn't get as many touches as he should have when he was at tight end in the past, he at least knows what's going on there. And Trey Burton, the one thing he brings to the table is he knows what's going on anywhere. So maybe in addition, maybe the motion alone won't confuse defenses, but maybe that combined with having guys that can line up everywhere will help disorient the defense a little.
Yeah, hopefully they can just create temporary mismatches just enough so you can get, like, an extra edge. I mean, that's what I see.
Right. I mean, we'll have to see how that works out. Hopefully, I think their goal is that when you start moving people around, if guys on defense go with you, it's probably man coverage. If they don't, it's probably zone coverage. I think that's the way they're looking at it. I imagine there's people smart enough to kind of counter that, but we'll see how that works out. And in the end, we're going to wrap up our offense segment here with last year, 328.7 yards per game, finished number 105 in the NCAA. There's only 120 teams, by the way. Do you guys see it being better or worse than it was last season, all these parts and P's making up the whole?
I see it better. I don't see it getting much worse than last year. Of course, when I say that, now it will. But honestly, I think they're going to be better. They're not going to burn the world down. They're not going to score 80 points a game or anything. But I mean, they're going to be better. They're going to be efficient. Just last year, they looked like the Jaguars, and going from, you know, I'm tired of watching that offense.
I think they're going to be better. I don't think they're going to be very good. But I just think, like Joe said, it's hard to get worse than 105th. I really think a big part of that is Brent Pease. While that might be an adjustment at first, Charlie Weiss just did not really do a great job at making any adjustments at all last year. And I see that he'll at least probably tinker with things enough to make it more effective as the season goes on. It's hard to say they're going to be a lot better when you lose playmakers like Dempsey Rainey, but I just think the offensive schematics will play in their favor a little bit more as the season goes on.
I don't know. This is the second time you said this. Charlie Weiss has become a popular scapegoat. I don't know how much of any of last season falls on him. It's easy to be a fan and say, you got to call this play, you got to call that play. People like talking about more crossing routes and stuff like that. First of all, they just didn't have any good players, and they still don't. And I think Charlie Weiss tried everything he could to make it work. When John Brantley's ankle was hurt, they went to the pistol. Like, he was trying every formation and combination of play calls possible to try to make something happen with his offense, and he just couldn't get it going. And now, there's no reason to think that he isn't a good play caller. We've never seen him really struggle with that. There was some Notre Dame games that weren't great, but you think about what he's accomplished in the NFL. It's just hard for me to believe that he's a bad, you know, offensive mind. And I don't know what Brent Pease is, but he's called plays at Boise for 1 year. I think people forget that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have a ton of experience either, and he may know their system and he may have been around a very effective system, but until we see him call the plays on his own for longer than one season, we don't know what they're going to get out of that. So
you think they're getting worse?
It's highly possible. They lost the three leaders in total yards from last season. That's never helpful. It doesn't appear that any of the freshmen are going to make an instant impact. None of them are ranked very highly on the depth chart. So I have a hard time thinking it gets better. And the only reasons I could be wrong is if one of the quarterbacks turns out to just be totally awesome, which is on the table. And I think that's where a lot of people's hope is. But in general, that's one of the things where I kind of have to wait till I see it to believe it. I mean, do you guys think that it all hinges on the quarterback play and whichever, if one guy steps up and actually carries them, or do you think just as a whole they're better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it hinges on quarterback play. And also, even though, you know, I may make fun of Gillislee and I don't think he's going to do much, I think kind of losing Dempsey Rainey actually frees the offense a little bit because, I mean, when you have two running backs like that, you're very... Like, they can't do anything up the middle, whereas maybe Florida's running backs now don't have their speed, but they do have speed to get around the edge. Maybe that helps a little bit. I'm throwing a lot of maybes and mights in here because, there's just no telling.
Yeah, that's the thing. We haven't really seen them play. We saw that open practice, like, as you said, Joe, is very limited. We don't have anything to go off of, so it's a lot of the same guys from last year and some different guys. But so maybe they come together, and as a whole, it's just better. But obviously the quarterbacks, like you said, will be a big part of that. But we just don't know, and I don't think we're taking a cop-out or something by saying we don't know, because if we had seen a lot of practices or something and they'd look sloppy there, then I think we could give a more definitive answer. But I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it's a big question mark because we haven't seen them.
All right, so now I think we've covered the offense about enough. I'm ready to move over to the defense. For as bad as the offense was last year, I think it's fair to say the defense was equally that good while Joe works on his air drums routine over here. Anyway, let's start up front with the defense. Looks like the starting defensive line, based on the depth chart, is going to be Dominic Easley at end, Omar Hunter at nose tackle, and Sharif Floyd at defensive tackle. So Easley's playing end, is going to rush the passer more. Floyd's going to go inside, which he said is like winning the lottery. Both are very talented players. What are your guys' expectations for the impact the switch is going to have on their performance and the defense as a whole?
You know, I mean, those guys have been talented. I mean, they've been talented prospects from day one, and we finally got to see some of that from Sharif Floyd. I mean, actually, we saw it some of this freshman year, too, but, I mean, I really anticipate Easley and Floyd having good seasons this year because, I mean, they're maybe their natural positions, you know? And
I think Easley's a natural tackle, though. Like, somebody's playing out of position one way or another.
But when I talked to Easley, though, he seems really into it, and he was telling me that he feels more free out there, and he really loves doing one-on-one things, so.
And one thing we've always heard about him is how he can anticipate the snap count and kind of get a jump on it and rush the quarterback that way. I think that translates maybe a little better to end than it does a tackle. Getting around the edge, maybe if he has that speed, even though he kind of came up as a defensive tackle, that might be good for him. And I think that going inside is going to be really good for Sharif Floyd. He has even more size, and that's really his natural position. I don't blame them for trying him out there last year because they were so thin at end, but I think it's definitely going to really help everything to get more penetration up the middle.
I think Floyd is definitely better at tackle, but I don't know about the Easley at end thing. He is the lighter guy. He's around 280, and doesn't seem like for a defensive tackle it certainly is. And I think what makes him such a good pass rusher is that first step that we talked about, and it led to a few offsides penalties, but it did lead to a lot of pressure on the quarterback, breaking up a few runs in the backfield. And I don't know how valuable one first step is on the outside compared to on the inside. It's certainly helpful. It's certainly going to make him a better pass rusher. But if he doesn't have that straight-on speed and flexibility and pass rush moves and hips and all the things they talk about, then it's going to be kind of nullified out there. So that's one of the things that remains to be seen, as is how he recovers from this ACL tear.
It seems like everyone's kind of glossing over that.
Exactly.
That happened very – it wasn't like that happened at the beginning.
It happened
in the Florida State game.
November 26th is the date I pulled on that one, and they said they've limited him some in practice.
They're saying it'll be a full go, even though he has been limited.
They say he'll be full go in the game, and he's ready to go, and that's not going to be an issue. But I always have to question how, especially if you're going to stick him out there at end, where he has to do more of that kind of movement and stuff like that. Can't just anchor as if that was ever his role anyway. But for a guy that relies on that, how worried are you guys about the ACL? Because I think it could be a big factor this year.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to put him out there if he's at risk for further injury, but I guess there's a good chance that it's one of those things where you just need more time to get back to full strength from something like that. I don't know. Like, if it had happened earlier in the season, I'd be more confident, but what's this? So this will be, I guess, 9 months, and a lot of times people say it's a 2-year injury to get back to where you were before.
Right.
So I think it's probably a little unrealistic to expect he's going to be exactly where he was before. So maybe he can still be effective. If he really isn't effective, then I guess we'll find out, and they'll put someone else in.
Yeah.
They're not going to keep him out there if he's being ineffective.
How dare Ronald Powell steal Easley's ACL thunder? Yeah, I agree with you, Josh. It's just, I expect Easley to be better just from the standpoint of he's more comfortable, and there is going to be those speed bumps with everything, especially if they're still limiting him. You know, maybe they're just being overly cautious. Who knows? Because we can't watch practice.
Right. Again, that's one that remains to be seen. But we'll move over to nose tackle. We'll talk about these guys. It's Hunter and Orr at the nose. And then behind them, something they talked about was an issue last year, is generally depth. Looks like it's going to be Damian Jacobs and Earl O'Connor adding some depth on the line. Freshman Jonathan Bullard, top 5-star recruit, I believe, should factor in. So what are your guys' thoughts on the depth, the overall strength of the defensive line unit as a whole, and maybe one of those guys I mentioned in behind the starters who could eventually stand out this season?
I feel like they're a good group. You know, they have a lot of talented people. I mean, they have more depth than last year, certainly. And they have a lot of playmakers. I mean, honestly, I know I'm kind of talking in generalities here, but it's the truth of it. And there's a lot of experience in that line. And for those who are unexperienced, they're really good when you have, like, a Fowler coming from Buck to be a rush end type situation thing. You have Ford coming in, and I think Florida has reason to be confident in this group.
I think they really do need to figure out a way to rush the passer better than they have in the past. I think they thought that Ronald Powell would kind of bring a little bit more to the table in terms of that than he ended up doing last year. And maybe they'll be able to rush with Fowler from the buck position some, or McCray or whoever they end up having out there. But they need to figure out a way to get pressure. And that's why I thought it was important that they get more defensive end recruits than they ended up doing besides as far as guys that are going to see the field besides Board and Fowler. And Board got the camp so late. He had the academic issue. And
right,
didn't he not
right
really start
that
till the beginning of fall, or was it a little after? Or, like, it was very – they spoke highly of how he played once he got on the field. But for a guy just to come in that late, maybe they got him the playbook before, but it just seems like it's hard to expect him to do big things early in the season if considering how little experience he has in the defense. I think getting him on the field and – playing well would be huge for them, though, because I think just getting pressure with your front four opens up things for everyone else.
Right, there's certainly got to be some reason he didn't show up on the two deep they mentioned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we talked about Ronald Powell a little bit. He's out with the ACL tear. He suffered that one in the spring game. If we're worried about Easley, we should be even more worried about Powell. And they project him to be out for midseason, but
it's October.
I mean, I don't see. I'll just say it. I don't think he's going to come back this year. It's just they are projecting a shorter recovery for an ACL than anything I've ever heard of, and totally disregarding the fact that he couldn't have the surgery right away because he had swelling in the knee. Took like 2 weeks for that to go away before they could even operate on him. I mean, do you guys think he'll come back in October? That's the time frame they're giving us. Dan Quinn said he's counting on him being there at some point.
Do you think you should just redshirt him at this point? I mean, I don't know. Because, like, if he comes back, how effective is he going to be? Because, like, they're limiting Easley now, you know, 9 months after the fact. You know, and at a position like Buck where you're rushing in a contact sport like football, I think, you know, it'd be better for Ronald Powell's career and for Florida if you just say, hey, listen, like, we're going to medically redshirt you this year. Or he hasn't even used his. He can just burn his redshirt this year.
Yeah, like Joe said, if Easley's already having to be limited, how long is it going to take them to ease Powell back into things? If you're saying they had to wait a couple weeks to have the surgery, so I guess that means it didn't happen until middle to the end of April. Mm-hmm. So if he comes back in October, it's 6 months, maybe even a little less. That just seems ridiculous for an ACL. Even if at that point the doctor says he's not risking further injury, I just have trouble believing he's going to be effective enough to make it worth using that year of eligibility. It seems like it'd be much more smart to, like you said, redshirt and have him come back next year when it'll have been long enough then that you can confidently say he's going to really be really good to go. He'll have much more time than even Easley has at this point now under his belt if he just comes back for 2013 and he's a redshirt junior.
Right. There's a It's a pretty strong history of people trying to come back from ACL injuries too early and either getting injuries in other situations or re-injuring the ACL. And I don't think they want to rush him back, but even if they try to, there's the issue of he has to be confident enough to go out there and play well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of factors working against him. So he did lead the team with 6 sacks last season, and the guy they're counting on to try to step up and replace him at the buck is Laurenti McCray. He missed 4 games last year with a shoulder injury, but I thought he looked good when he was in there. He ended up with 1.5 sacks and 7.5 tackles for loss. He's played both linebacker and defensive end for Florida, so he's the kind of guy that fits what they're looking for in that hybrid buck spot. What are your guys' thoughts on him as kind of a fill-in, either permanently if Powell's out all year or at least until he comes back?
He's got a football name, Laurenti McCray. That sounds cool. But, you know, I mean, I like what I've seen from him, especially last year, and I feel like he has the experience. He knows the offense. You know, I mean, he's one of the guys Muschamp picked to go to Hoover, which I know might mean nothing to some coaches. But, I mean, I think it's a big deal, especially on a team that's kind of, you know, searching for its identity and needing to people. And I think Laurenti McCray is going to be a guy. He's no Ronald Powell, but I feel like he could be an effective guy at the buck this year.
I think he could be at least give you more. Probably he might not give you what Ronald Powell did towards the end of last season, because I think Powell did start playing better at the very end of last year. But maybe Greg disagrees. I thought he was part of the defense, really kind of taking a step forward. I thought he was very ineffective, though, the first half of the season. I think he can at least give you more than Powell was giving you at the beginning of last year. And I think that over the course of the season, that could just translate to the defense being improved from where they were the first half of last season.
I'll say real quickly, I was going to do this if Ronald Powell was playing this season, but I think if you go back and look back at all his sacks, either just look at how he got
them
or the timing, it's way after. It'll be like a play where he's on containment and he's not even rushing the passer, and then the guy scrambles around for a while, and like 8 seconds into the play, he just kind of falls on him. Or, you know, things like that where he really isn't kind of making plays and being disruptive and affecting the quarterback, as they like to say. But I think in that regard, Fowler is a guy to watch. We talked a little bit about him before. Talented 5-star recruit they stole away from Florida State at the last moment. The reviews have been good, and Dan Quinn said he's ready to contribute. I mean, I am kind of surprised that I'm surprised he's not figuring into the starting rotation right off the bat. I thought that would be something we would see. I don't know what you guys think.
I'm surprised he's really come in and kicked butt like they're saying he has. When our friend Brian Holt went down to watch a game of his last year in his senior year of high school, he just had very negative things to say about his body language and his demeanor on the field. And I thought, oh, maybe this is a guy that's just going to come into Florida a little too overconfident and think he's all that and he won't have to try very hard and he thinks he can just break the starting rotation without having to even give effort in practice.
It's just something we've seen here before.
Yeah, but it sounds like that hasn't been the case at all. So I think the fact that he's come in, and we knew all the way along he had great athletic ability, and it seemed like in high school he might have squandered some of his senior year just thinking, knowing he already had all these college offers lined up, and it didn't really matter what he did. He could just go goof off on the field. That's what it really sounded like he was doing. But if he's going to really putting in that effort now, combined with the great athletic ability we know he has, then I think we will see a lot of him this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, like, he's, I mean, in terms of starting, I just don't think he's going to jump McRae or easily, just because those are experienced guys, those are guys coaches like. But, I mean, I definitely think he's going to factor in, absolutely. We'll see him tomorrow.
Now, opposite him at the Sam linebacker spot, Darren Kitchens got the nod over Nyer and Ball. The thing I'll say about Ball, you read the Yahoo story on him, he's come a long way to overcome the medical condition that really kept him out all of last year and had a lot of people questioning whether he'd ever play football again. So when he gets on the field, that's a big moment for him. But I'll be honest with you guys, in terms of their actual ability, I have nothing on him. I don't know.
We haven't seen
him. Anything about either of these guys.
No.
Darren Kitchens is married. I know that.
Right.
Good for him.
All right.
hard hitting
analysis on the Alligator Sports podcast. With that, I think we can move to middle linebackers. John Bostic and Jelani Jenkins are back. They've always been solid, if not spectacular. Another couple of guys we've heard a lot about, what the off-season weight training did for them. Expected to be bigger and stronger. Do you guys think that'll make them better this year?
I don't think that was Jenkins' problem last year. I think he played well. Everyone just remembers him dropping interceptions all the time.
That's true.
I don't think that him not being strong enough, I don't remember him missing a lot of tackles and getting overpowered by offensive linemen or anything like that.
He is a smaller guy.
He's a smaller guy, but I don't necessarily – maybe adding the weight just allow him to do more things and run defense. But I think that wasn't something where I saw huge limitations with his game last year. I think that he'll take that next step forward if he learns how to just – hold on to the ball. He seems like he's in the right place enough that he must know what he's doing in pass coverage, that maybe if he can just turn those into interceptions that go the other way, because it's quick enough, I'm sure he can get returns on interceptions. I think if we see more of a big play factor out of him, I think that'd be the biggest thing. And as far as Bostic goes, I mean, I think he's pretty solid. They just maybe want to see him just also make more big plays, because they're just this defense as the whole, that was the big thing, just didn't force turnovers last year.
Right.
That's the thing. You just kind of think of Jenkins and Boston. You're like, oh, yeah, they're really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not like guys like Rolando McClain, like other SEC linebackers like that, because those guys, like, make plays.
Yeah,
right. And they're solid.
Yeah, Boston and Jenkins are solid. They're good. You know, they're going to do their job, and they're going to do it adequately. But, I mean, this year I think the step for them is going to be, yeah, like Jenkins getting his hands on the football when he's, you know, deflecting him past.
Yeah, you hate to, like, really harp on him for that, because he's not in the secondary. He's not even a cornerback or anything like that. But just that's one area where his game – we just know from watching him last year where his game really could take a step forward if he is in those same positions he was last season.
All right, you look at the cornerback situation now, like Josh mentioned, there's a lot of oars there. The depth chart has a couple oars at the cornerback situation. Right, oars a two-way player. All right, so here's the four guys who appear to be in contention for two spots, or if you believe Will Muschamp, three spots because they play a lot of nickel, or four spots because they play a lot of dime. But anyway, the guys, Jalen Watkins, showed a lot of ups and downs last season. The Georgia game sticks out as bad. Had a couple touchdown catches against him, but he was a highly recruited guy. He's a taller guy at 6 foot, so he's got some potential for sure. Marcus Roberson, I thought, played really well and was easily the top cornerback on the team last season. Mm-hmm. Obviously a big-time recruit, obviously talented, but you got to worry about his neck injury.
Yep.
Anytime it's something like that, you never know how they're going to come back, and it took him out for the end of last season. Luchez Purifoy, which I can't ever spell correctly, is another big guy. He's only a sophomore, but he's 6'1" and talented. And then Cody Riggs is a guy who's been around a little while. He's more of a press corner, more of a smaller guy. So pick your two out of the group. Tell me what you like about him. Who do you see having the biggest impact this year?
Well, I really like what Roberson did last year. I think he's a talented player, and assuming he can get over the neck thing, I think he can be a factor at cornerback. I also really like Luchez Purifoy. You know, he got the size, and you know, during the open practice, I really got to see him. And I mean, obviously it's practice. I wish we could watch practice.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think Luchez Purifoy should be the guy. Because, I mean, if Cody Riggs and Jalen Watkins haven't done anything significant by now, you know, I think you kind of just need to go with the young guns and see what they can do for you.
Purefoy's my guy because he's from Pensacola, so I got to support him.
Homer.
Yeah, I think they probably want him and Roberson to win the jobs because they're bigger, and it's nice to have big cornerbacks that can handle big receivers. Mm-hmm. I think Roberson obviously is in one of those spots because he was so effective last year. The neck was really disconcerting. I saw him on the bus all the time last year when I was taking the bus to class. He had that neck brace on for a while. Like, people that are just Gator fans that aren't on campus, that aren't seeing these guys, they probably might underestimate how serious it must have been. Like, it wasn't like it was something where he was just kind of wearing it when he went to sleep at night or something like that. Like, he was walking around campus in this thing all the time.
This is some more Alligator Sports podcast only insight.
Yeah.
Marcus Roberson wears a neck brace on the bus.
Yes. Yeah. And well, I don't think they'd be putting him back in there if he was at risk for serious further injury. But it was serious. That is not a question mark to be taken lightly. And with Purefoy, I think he was very good on special teams last year, but he didn't play a whole lot of corner. I think there were just other guys that were getting the time there. And he's obviously impressed in the offseason, and I think those guys should get the jobs. But I don't think Watkins and Riggs are bad options to have behind them.
Yeah, I remember Roberson's injury. Like, Muschamp was like, "Oh, yeah, it's a sprained neck," and it turns out he had like a cracked vertebrae.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bit worse than that.
Gosh, like that was like approaching like near on ball kind of seriousness. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Right.
So, I mean.
So yeah, it remains to be seen what's going to happen with that. Behind them at safety, Josh Evans is supposed to start at free. I don't have a ton to say about him, but I saw him take some bad angles last season, and I think a lot of that has to do with Deontay Saunders, who supposedly is going to miss exactly 2 games, no more, no less, with a hamstring injury. Pretty accurate projection for a hamstring injury, but we'll see what the deal is there. When he comes back, do you guys think he eventually earns that role back, or is Josh Evans going to be the guy there?
I think Evans will have a chance to solidify himself there. If he plays, I mean, playing well in the bowling green game alone, I don't think would guarantee anything, but if he does well against Texas A&M, I could see them wanting to keep him out there because he's more of a physical specimen than Saunders. He's a bigger guy. And like I said, I think we've talked, it's well documented, Muschamp likes the bigger defensive backs. If he can prove himself there, I could see him sticking there. But if not, then I don't think they'd have a problem putting Saunders back in because he showed promise last year, made some plays.
I think Orr is going to slide in for both corner spots and get some reps there.
Get some serious running safety into it.
I mean, you look at Josh Evans and Matt Elam. They're the Predators, man. And Evans has grown the hair. I mean, he's got the hair, the Predator hair. So he's obviously entrenched in the spot. But, you know, I mean, I think Saunders is going to contribute. And I think, you know, they're both going to get significant reps. I don't know what the starting is going to be like.
I think I see Saunders coming in and taking over the role because I thought last year he was one of the true turnover-forcing ball hawk kind of guys, and he only had 2 interceptions, although that somehow tied for the team lead. But just the ability to kind of jump routes and read plays and make something happen in a way that other players didn't show that they could, I think that's going to be a big benefit for him. And last but certainly not least, we have to talk about Matt Elam, and he is great against the run, great in pass coverage. In nickel situations, they move him towards the line of scrimmage. He either led the team or was near the top in every statistical defensive category, has all kinds of potential, everything you look for aside from height, which you easily overcome that. So I'll ask it to you guys this way. Do you think he is the best player on the team? Because I certainly do.
Absolutely. I mean, what can I add? I mean, you know.
I agree. I don't think there's much else to say. It's pretty obvious.
Which,
you know what? I mean,
sets the best
right. No,
team.
In a way, that's a mark of how good he is that we don't even have.
Don't have to spend time on it. Yeah,
it's just he's good. So, taking all those parts as a whole, what are your expectations for the defense? Me personally, a little bit worried about the pass rush. I assume they're going to stop the run pretty well. They did last year, had most of the same guys back, but Jay Howard was the guy who rushed the passer a little bit from the middle. Ronald Powell, for his much as he's struggled and not lived up to expectations, was the guy that they counted on as one of their better pass rushers. We have to see how the Easley Floyd situation is going to factor into their ability to get after the quarterback, but for me, that's something I'm worried about, and I think it could hold them back a little bit, maybe from being a top 5 defense nationally, but I think top 10 is certainly in their range. I mean, what are you guys thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to hinge, you know, on how Easley and Floyd do in that switch and how Easley's going to hold up after the ACL. And also, I think it's going to be big to see what Fowler can do. I mean, obviously, he's a talented guy coming in. We've talked about it already. And if he can become effective in rotating above with Lorenzo McRae, then and maybe actually pop into other spots, too, when Easley needs to be spelled at DN or something like that, I think that that could be a big factor in the pass rate.
Yeah, based on what we know now, I think what Greg would say should hold true, but I think if Board or Fowler really steps up and provides that extra pass rush, I think they could be top five.
That's true. You know, I think before I kind of wrap it up, I think that's a theme that when we talked last season, I remember at the end of the year, we sat down to do the preview podcast for this year, and I drew up kind of a projected depth chart, and Matt Watts and Cody Jones were all mad at me, like, we can't do a preview podcast and a projected depth chart without talking about the freshmen. And I said, I don't know who's going to come in and who's going to contribute, and we know nothing about any of these guys. And now here we are, and I don't know how many freshmen even appear on Florida's two deep. And I think a lot of people who thought this was going to be a year of a turnaround thought it was going to be because of the freshmen. So are you worried that we haven't heard anything about them? Is it like a secret weapon kind of thing? What are your guys' takes on that?
I think it's an area of concern. You know, you go around the country, you hear other schools, like, hear buzz about freshmen at other schools, you know, and if, like, you know, the only guys you're really hearing about here are, you know, Fowler and, well, Pittman, I guess.
And you're hearing about them barely in mixed reviews.
I can't speak for the other schools as far as how much press access they get for practice and stuff like that, but I don't think they're not telling us a whole lot. I mean, if you ask them about any one specific guy, they're going to say something relatively positive.
He's pretty even with all the other guys, too.
Yeah.
Aura's also right there.
He's right there. He's getting... They're even. I can't tell the difference between two quarters.
Right. Every player looks exactly the same as any other player. Right?
Yeah, so I can understand why we're not hearing a lot about the freshmen, because we're not hearing a lot of detail about anything.
Right. All right. Fair enough. So with that, in lieu of more specific Gator guarantees, we're going to use that section to give our kind of win projections for the year. I will start us off, because you guys probably aren't prepared. My over-under that I would set if I was doing the Vegas line is 6.5, which is absurdly low. But I have a hard time seeing them. If I had to pick a number that was round, it would be 7. I think that's probably a more accurate projection. But just going through all the games and thinking about which ones they have a chance to win and which ones they have a chance to lose, kind of looking at all the probabilities, I'm not giving a win or loss to each game, but I think just based on the likelihood they beat this team, the likelihood they lose to that team, there's a few gimmies on the schedule for sure. You got the Bowling Green, you got the UL Lafayette, you got the Jacksonville State, and honestly, Kentucky's a gimme, too. Kentucky is really bad this season. But aside from those four, I think all of these games are extremely losable, some more than others. And I think you saw South Carolina last night, consensus top 10 team, went on the road to Vanderbilt and struggled. I think one thing that works against Florida is they have to play all the teams they're about as good as on the road, and they have to play all the teams that are and they have to play a lot of the teams that are way better than them, the LSUs of the world, at home. So it's kind of like, you know, when you had to play LSU on the road, you were going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
You would almost trade that to have home field advantage against a team you're even with. Mm-hmm. And I just think it kind of works the opposite way this season, where they're going to have to win some tough games against teams they're about as good as in harsh environments, and then they're going to lose games here anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, what are your guys' projections for win totals?
Yeah, I'm thinking 7-5, and we'll see with the bowl game.
Yeah, I agree. I'd say 7-5, but even 6 wins wouldn't surprise me.
All right. I mean, and the Vegas over-under is 8.5, apparently. And ESPN did a thing I was reading over the weekend where they ranked their favorite over-under bets in all of college football just based on what the lines are and their perception. They wanted under 8.5 for Florida. But different ESPN article said that the Gators were one of the top dark horses to make a BCS bowl.
What?
It's kind of the dichotomy of views, if you will. There's just a lot of people who... With how little we know about the quarterback situation and a lot of these guys as a whole, there's a pretty wide range of projections for this team.
Yeah, Phil Steele has Florida at 11-1, so they
figure. Right. There's a lot of different ways this could work out. I feel like I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about Bowling Green. You guys probably don't know a lot, but as part of my process of trying to pick every game, I went through and looked a little bit into Bowling Green, so I'll do a quick rundown. Quarterback is Matt Schills. Supposedly is very good.
All world.
Right. It's one of those things where you're going to get asked, you're going to have coaches and coordinators get asked questions about the opposing team in the week before the game, and obviously they're going to say nice things. He threw for a lot of yards last season. We'll see if he's actually any good at football. Anthon Samuel is a young, small back who is pretty productive, more of a shifty guy. They lost almost all of their receiving production. I think they only bring back about 20% of their receiving yards. Those guys are very unproven. The offensive line pass protected pretty well last year, didn't run block all that well, bring back a lot of their guys. Boo Boo Gates is the top is one of the top defensive players and return men, which is awesome because his name is Boo Boo. This guy Dwayne Woods is supposed to be a good linebacker, and Chris Jones is actually a good run, a good pass rusher, not like a good pass rusher for their conference, just like an actually good player. Apparently, I obviously haven't seen him, but this is what I'm reading and hearing. So.
First test for the offensive line, I guess.
Yeah, perhaps. So I gave them like a 10% chance to beat Florida. Maybe that's a little high. I guess Florida's a 29-point favorite when we did the picks column yesterday. You guys want to pick it against the line? You have any thoughts? I don't remember what you guys
thought. In the picks column, I picked
the Falcons.
I did, too, in the picks column. I think 29 is a lot to expect to Gators to win by when we don't even know if they're capable of scoring 29 points.
Right. That was my theory last season, and then they went ahead and covered the spread pretty easily against FAU, so I'm scared, but I did take the same logic and go with Bowling Green. So.
Yeah, I think Florida's going to win 30-1.
30-1, it's a push.
It's going to be a push.
It's a push. Joe's big into pushes today. All right. All right, with that, I guess we're ready to wrap up the first show of the year. Didn't go too bad, all things considered, I'd say.
Got accidentally flicked the microphone there when I was fanning myself.
Well, we can hope it didn't break everything. Again, haven't done this rundown in a while, but let's see. You can like our page on Facebook, facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. You can subscribe on iTunes, hopefully. We should have that technical issue resolved. I know the last one didn't download at all. But anyway, you can always listen to the show on the website if you're an iTunes-only downloader, alligatorsports.org. That's another place you can find all of our coverage. I know Joe has a feature running today about the two quarterbacks and their race. Always other great content on there.
Follow us on Twitter.
Yeah, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Greg Luca. Joe, you're at?
Joe_Morgan.
Josh, you're at?
Josh Jurnovoy, JOSHJURNOVOY. I was talking about Alligator Sports Twitter.
You can also follow us all on Twitter at Alligator Sports. Let's see, I don't think I missed any of them. So with that, I guess we're ready to wrap it up. We'll be back on Monday to recap the Bowling Green game. And any news that comes out of the weekend? Well, maybe we'll be back on Monday. We have Monday off because of Labor Day, but likely we'll have a show either then or Tuesday. So we will see you then. And until then, thank you for listening.